Well, brethren, we have a treat for you this morning, even rarer than a United States passing through speaker is a Romanian passing through speaker. Brother Alan fits that qualification, and he will speak to us this morning on the parable of the penny. The parable of the penny, Brother Alan.
Thanks, Brother Russ. Dobre, bună dimineața, shalom. You have love, brethren, from your brethren in Sighet, Romania, where I take part, and also from Wenatchee, Washington, where I take part when I'm able to, online, and from the countries I visited so far since the last time I was here, which would include Italy, France, Germany, England, Poland, Ukraine, Moldova, and I'll be going to Australia, New Zealand. We'd like to speak to you about a principle and a concept which we think is extremely valuable. And of course, the key word there is valuable. There's many things of value that we prize in our lives. And as we grow and develop as Christians, as we grow older, a lot of times those things which are valuable to us change. And I have to say for myself that as I get older, things become less and less important, and people become more and more important. And I think that's the way that it should be. I think that's the lessons that the Scriptures teach us. You know, when it's all over and the dust settles, who's going to be standing? It's going to be our brethren, our loved ones. So this lesson, although it may not be what you expected, it has to do with value. What's truly valuable? That's one of the lessons. I was looking at a reprint article, reprint 5473, and I was surprised. I'm sure I read it before. I'm sure you've had that experience where, how did I miss that? So we want to share some of the things that we missed in that article that have to do with this parable. Now, if you're familiar with the parable, I'm sure, and it's the parable of the penny, and on the surface that doesn't seem like a penny's worth very much. But of course you remember that in the parable, that's a day's wages. So it's something that has value. It's not something that's just worthless like a penny you find on the street. A day's wages is something that's valuable. But the point is, though that was very important at the time, there was something that was much more important, and it's that aspect that we want to touch on in this lesson. The penny in this parable, or the day's wages in this parable, was not as important as something else. And that something else was the reaction of those who received that penny. That's the lesson. Not the penny, but the reaction of those who received it. And that lesson is something that all of us can apply in a practical sense. And that's the lesson that we want to focus on. So I'm sorry, this is not going to be a prophetic lesson. Though we will touch on that incidentally, because that was one of the things that surprised me in studying this article. Now, how important is the lesson in this parable? Well, it's another one of those lessons that is so important that our very lives could depend upon it. Because the manner in which we react to what is being illustrated in this parable is going to determine whether we are part of the bride or not. In fact, it may even determine whether we receive life or not. So it's important. All right, if you want to turn to Matthew, the 20th chapter, we're going to go ahead and read the parable. It's 16 verses, but it's very crucial to our subject, and so we need to look at it again. Matthew 21 to 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle and saith unto them, Why stand ye here all the day idle? They say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard said unto his steward, Call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house, saying, These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, Friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that is thine, and go thy way, and I will give unto this last even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? If thine eye is evil, is thine eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first, and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. All right, we have a number of symbols here. It's a parable. Symbols are found in parables. We have the kingdom of heaven, we have the householder, we have the laborers, the vineyard, the penny, the various hours of the day, five are mentioned. We have the steward, and we have the murmuring. I don't think there's any others. If there is, let me know afterwards. So we want to look at an explanation of these things. And we'll start off by some general observations and a general overview. And these are points that we will accentuate as we get into the details. But first of all, this parable applies to the present life. It has to apply to the present life. That's one point. And we'll get into why we believe that's true. Second one, this was the surprise for me. This parable is not a time prophecy. And we'll get into the details why we believe that's true, that it's not a time prophecy. What are the lessons then in this parable? Well, you might have a list. This is mine. The main lessons of this parable, I believe, are gratitude, contentment, and brotherly love. Gratitude, contentment, and brotherly love. And there's also a warning here. That would be the fourth item. Because there's a danger. And that's what's represented in the murmuring. We as the Lord's people have received so much. How much have we received? A lot. That's good. How much of a lot?
Everything.
What does Paul say? What do you have that you did not receive? We've received everything. We need to always remember that. And so we should be grateful to serve the Lord even if there was no penny. Even if we didn't get the penny. We should be glad to serve. We should be glad that it would cost us something. You remember that manna text talking about preaching the truth? How could we possibly murmur against what the Lord has given to us? Well, if it wasn't possible, there would be no parable of the penny. So it means it is possible. And that's what we want to look at. But again, most of that's going to come a little later. So first we want to look at these symbols. The kingdom of heaven. Now, this symbol is used consistently by our Lord in his parables. And I believe the most frequent use of it we find in Matthew 13 and other places, the parables there. And the kingdom of heaven there represents the kingdom class or the kingdom circumstances in its embryo condition in the present life on this side of the veil. You know, you look at Matthew 13, those parables, and they're all consistent in that regard when it speaks of the kingdom of heaven. And many other scriptures the same. And I believe that this is the only possible interpretation which fits all the circumstances in this parable. That it must apply in the present life. Then there's the householder. And this also seems to be very easy of interpretation. And though each parable stands on its own, and each parable is different, and each parable has its own lessons, we can see similarities from one parable to the other. And right away, I think when we think of a vine, a vineyard, and someone who's in charge, who owns that, we probably think of John 15. And there you have the parable of the vineyard and the husbandman there. And so we believe the householder who owns the vineyard in this parable would correspond to the husbandman, which is in John 15. And that's consistent with the circumstances too. Because who's the one that does the calling of the laborers? It's the householder who goes out and calls the laborers. And so that would be consistent with representing our Heavenly Father. He's the one that does the calling. And in the 16th verse here, the first shall be last, the last shall be first. Many are called, but few are chosen. And in John 6:44, we're familiar with that scripture. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him. So it's God who does the calling. We think that God is the householder in this case. That's really important in order for us to understand the seriousness of the lesson in this parable. The vineyard itself. Well, what is the vineyard? Now, I think it's an interesting symbol which has different aspects to it. But in the parable itself, the part that is very important is the fact that it is a place where these laborers, they're called to go there in order to work in that vineyard. So it's a place of work, it's a place of service, primarily. But it's not without merit to consider what it is they're working on. They're working on the vineyard, and if we already drew a parallel to John 15, we think that's valid. And so we think that the vine, in this case, does represent the true church, the consecrated. Now, in a general way, then, it would show the service of any kind that can be rendered to God during the gospel age. Now, friends, we know that any service we can provide, at best, what are we? We are at best unprofitable servants. But it is speaking of that service. So, service to God, well, He doesn't need us, but He allows us to serve. But what are we serving? And in what way are we serving God in this picture? The workers in this picture, they are tending the vine. I don't know if any of you have seen commercial vineyards or worked in a commercial vineyard or watched the work that goes on. There's a lot of work that goes on in a commercial vineyard. There's a lot of work that has to be done almost on a daily basis. And it shows the tremendous care that has to be taken for those vines in order that they're not affected by pests or by animals, that they don't get to wood making and they have to be trimmed properly in order to bear fruit. Now, all of that is very appropriate to this picture, isn't it? If that represents the true church and the workers, well, they also represent the true church. But we don't have a problem with that if we understand it correctly. It shows the privilege of the consecrated and the Spirit-begotten who are serving God by serving each other. And there are specific things in this concept. It's the loving service they show to each other, watching out for the best interests of the fellow members of the vine, assisting each other in the cultivation of the fruits of the Spirit. And other things I'm sure you could add to that. So we have to ask ourselves, if we're in that picture, are we serving God in this way? Are we true laborers in the vineyard? And of course, the laborers themselves is a symbol, and it's pretty obvious that that represents those who were called and those who accepted the call. So that can only be talking about the consecrated and Spirit begotten. It doesn't include any tares, doesn't include any who are in the way towards consecration, household of faith. It's restricted to the consecrated, the Spirit begotten. That's rather important, again, to the lessons that are given in this parable. They're in a covenant relationship, and that would be shown by the labor contract that these workers had. The man who owns the vineyard, he goes out, you come in, you're going to work for me, and you're going to get paid. Now, granted, some of them, that wasn't obvious, but they all did get paid. So we think that that covenant relationship underscores the fact that these are consecrated, Spirit begotten. Okay, now we get to some of the tough parts, and I'm sure some of you are probably wondering, how are you going to work with the penny? And what are you going to do with the hours that are shown here? Well, the penny, as already stated, that's a normal wage for one day. And we said that this parable has to apply to the present life, and this is a very good example if we analyze the details as to why it has to apply to the present life. It cannot be on the other side of the veil, and that is something we can determine with absolute certainty. And why is that? Because there's no murmuring on the other side of the veil. And this is a point that Brother Russell underscores, not only in this article, but in ones that went before that. No murmuring on the other side of the veil. So what does that tell us? The murmuring's not over there. That means the working is here on this side of the veil. The murmuring is on this side of the veil. And the payment of the penny is on this side of the veil. It's the reward for serving God. And I like things simple. So to me, the simplest approach to what the penny represents is just the rewards that we get, the blessings that we get for serving God in the present life. And, you know, there's a tie-in with the two verses in the end of chapter 19 which link up to this. Everyone that hath forsaken houses or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my name's sake shall receive... What do they receive? A hundredfold. They receive a hundredfold in the present life. And they shall inherit everlasting life. But many are called and few are chosen. First shall be last, last shall be first. So we believe this is referring to that hundredfold blessing which we receive in the present life. But those who truly appreciate what they're receiving, they recognize that this is not something they deserve. It's an unmerited favor. It's by the grace of God. And they look at it as a reward, not as something they got coming to them. And we find this concept in places like Proverbs 11:25. Those who water will be watered. And that's just one of many ways that we could look at, you know, the rewards we receive, the hundredfold blessing. You've all experienced it. It's not just something theoretical. We know what that hundredfold blessing is, and it's not the same for all of us, but we've received it. We've received those blessings. And there are special blessings. The joys, the blessings, the honors, the privileges that we receive in this present life resulting from labor in the Lord's vineyard. And I believe that during each period of the Gospel Age, there have been special blessings. And we've been very blessed to have those special blessings. Now, there's one very special blessing that I think has been true throughout the age, and I'm going to point to it. I pointed to the word hope at the base of this lectern. And hope is something that's so very important and so very valuable. And it's something that we receive and it's something we can give to others. And it's part of the rewards that we receive in this life. You won't need it on the other side. Okay, the toughest part, the hours. And you know, even the world uses this expression, it's the 11th hour. And the usual tendency here is to apply this in a prophetic sense. Well, I'm not going to say that I'm set in concrete on this and that's not valid in some respect or another, but I've had to relook at it in analyzing this article and thinking about it logically, and I personally don't feel, certainly that is not the primary application, I do not believe. There might be a secondary sense in which we could take it, but what does it mean? Why do I feel that it's not a time prophecy? Well, let's be consistent. Let's look at all the details that are contained here. And again, these are not my thoughts. These are thoughts that I got from this article. I'm just sharing them with you. If it's a time prophecy, then early in the morning would be at the beginning of the Gospel Age. And the 11th hour would be at the end of the Gospel Age. And the other hours are different stages throughout that. Now, if there had been seven calls, I might have been more inclined to think that that was really pertinent. But there's not. There's five. But what does that mean? If it's a parable and we're going to be consistent in how we apply those symbols, what would that mean practically? It would mean that all the murmurers were in the early church. Does that make sense? And this is the point Brother Russell makes. I didn't see that before. Everybody says Brother Russell wasn't sure about the parable of the penny. Well, he wasn't in some ways. But there was a lot more that he was sure about, I think, than what I'd realized before. It's not reasonable to think that all the murmurers are in the early church. But in addition to that, if it's prophetic, why in the world does the early church get rewarded last? That doesn't make sense if we're looking at it as a time prophecy. At least it doesn't make sense to me. And then finally, it's the 11th hour Christians would be the only ones who are alive if that's at the end of the gospel age. You're not going to have the early church alive. You're not going to have the third and the sixth and the ninth hour Christians alive. They're all dead. And in the parable, they get rewarded last if it's a time prophecy. It doesn't fit in my mind. It's not logical. It's not reasonable. So what does it mean? Again, if we remember the other symbols and how we apply them, the vineyard is a place of service. And that place of service has been open all throughout the gospel age. And all throughout the gospel age, there have been those who had more privileges and those who had less privileges, which could be represented in the different lengths of time that they worked during that day. And there's been murmurers in every period. But it's primarily shown within a certain class. And I believe that that's the lesson that is trying to show murmuring amongst a certain class and not during a certain time. So, the early morning workers would be the ones who worked longest. And the others worked shorter, and the 11th hour ones worked the shortest. And it would seem to show differing opportunities for service. Differing in either time or in degree, the number of opportunities or the length of service. But that, again, can apply throughout the age and can be consistent to all the other details of this parable. Now, it's true that at the close of the age, we use that expression, Brother Russell uses it, I've used it, we're in the 11th hour. Well, we know what that means. And I don't have a problem with using the concept, but I don't think that's the principal lesson of this parable. That's my opinion. And if you believe otherwise, that's okay too. But there have been tests all throughout the age along the lines of what's given here. And the reward takes place throughout the gospel age because it's in the present life. And the murmuring takes place throughout the gospel age. And we'll get more on the lessons of that very shortly. But we still have a couple more symbols. Now you have the steward. And the steward here is the servant or the agency that is used by God to give the rewards to the Lord's people in the present life throughout the age. So I don't think it's talking about one person. You know, it would be nice, we'd probably like to think, well, that's probably Brother Russell there. Because he certainly gave us blessings of present truth. And maybe he's part of the servant or agency that is used by the Lord, but that was true with the other six during the age. In my opinion, I believe that it's Jesus who is the principal steward because throughout the age, I believe that he has been the one who has given the blessings. All things are of the Father through the Son. And when we look at the parable of the talents, for instance, in Matthew 25, it's Jesus who gives the rewards in that case. So I think it's consistent. But if there's another thought, I'd be glad to hear that too. So the joys, the blessings, the honors, and the privileges come through various agencies, and we're thankful for those agencies, but it's all under the direct guidance and supervision of our Lord Jesus. Behold, I am with you, lo, I'm with you throughout the age. Always. Okay, let's get into the murmuring. I believe that's really the principal lesson, the most important lesson for all of us in this parable. Can we be guilty of murmuring? And the answer is a resounding yes. Now, when we start to describe some of the possible forms of murmuring, we should cringe. We should. But, you know, it's not always so black and white, and we can fall into some of these things very easily without even realizing it. So we're going to look at five examples. Again, you can make your own list, and you probably come up with other ones, but these are the five that popped out to my attention. First of all, what was this murmuring? They were murmuring against God and God's arrangement. They were murmuring against God and against God's arrangement. Now, none of us, none of the consecrated would ever consciously murmur against God and God's arrangement. That's unthinkable. But it's possible. Again, because there are subtle ways we might fall into that. What does it mean? Well, it means we don't like the way God does things. Well, that sounds pretty bad too, doesn't it? Did that ever happen? Happened with Judas. He didn't like the way Jesus did things. He didn't like the way God, through Jesus, was doing things. That shows you how serious it is. We don't want to be guilty of the sin of Judas. But we have to be so careful that we understand what God is doing and what His arrangement is so that we don't unconsciously be murmuring against it. It shows a lack of loyalty. It shows selfish motives. And it shows a lack of submission. And if anything, I think that's the one. And that is such a key concept for us as Christians. That's an integral part of our consecration. So the problem is lack of submission, and the solution is submission. So, you know, each one of these we can get a lesson. We're not just going to, you know, point out the problems here. We want to also look at what the solutions are. Lack of submission and submission. God's arrangement is specific in each period, and we want to be sure that we're acquainted with it so that we can be submitted to it. And let's remember the lesson of Numbers 16. And in Numbers 16, you had some who were murmuring against God's arrangement. And that was Korah and his companions. And you remember what happened to them. I believe that's a picture of second death. Now, you know, let's not get discouraged here, because we're not talking about a slip where you make a mistake once. That's not how it works. If there's a consistent pattern and it becomes part of our character that we're murmurers, that's the ultimate danger. So it's serious business. But let's not be too discouraged about it, because there's hope. Let's never forget the hope. Number two, accusing God of being unfair by giving more to some than what they deserve. Or they might even think in their minds that he gave more to others than they got, which wasn't true. They all got the same in the parable. But there was this attitude, well, you know, like kids when they're quarreling. Well, you gave Johnny more than you gave me. We don't want to do that. We're children of God. We want to be good children. We don't want to involve ourselves in the evils that are portrayed here. Jealousy. Greed. Envy. Those are the things we must avoid. Jealousy's cruel as the grave. Songs of Solomon 8:6. And what's the rest of that verse? I love that verse. Jealousy is cruel as the grave, but, and in the correct translation of this is, love is stronger than death. Love is stronger than death. And that's true. It's love that's eventually going to conquer death. And it's love which has to be the solution to this particular problem that's identified here. We got to get rid of the jealousy and the greed and the envy by developing love. Now, those are things we all know. Those things are obvious. But it's another incentive for us to do that in order to fit in with the lesson of this parable. None of us deserves anything. You know, there's this perverse tendency on the part of fallen nature that we as human race, you know, fallen human race, not we as brethren, although it's danger for us too. We should not feel that we are made less because somebody else got more. If somebody else gets more than you do, that doesn't make you less than them. And again, that's not even what's shown in this parable. It's only an attitude. It's only a perception, and it's a wrong perception. That somehow you made them better than me. You know, they said that. They said that in the parable. You made them better than me. Well, God didn't make them better than them. They did that to themselves because they lowered themselves by falling into these wrong attitudes. The proper attitude should be a desire that others would receive more than us. You know, that's scriptural, that we would want others to receive more than us, but it goes against fallen human nature again. And in fact, the proper attitude, we should be willing to give to others what we have. You know, what if the 11th hour workers, you know, comes to them and the husband says, well, you know, you really didn't work very long. I'm not going to give you anything. The proper attitude of the first ones that came in, they would say, well, here, I'll give you half of mine. That would be the proper Christian attitude. We should desire that others are blessed and we would give to them. So love is the answer. Number three, lack of gratitude for what had been promised and received. That's shown in this parable. And in fact, they accused this class. They're accusing God of injustice. They're accusing God of injustice. You know, the things that they're accusing God of here, these are really serious matters. And it comes from a lack of gratitude. As we said before, what we have been promised is an unmerited favor. There is no justice involved. It's a matter of God's grace in the reality. Now, the ones who came first, he promised them that he'd give them a penny. But he didn't promise that to any of the others. And I think that perhaps that's intended to show that there's no obligation on God's part to give us anything. What he gives us is by his grace, it's his favor. And if we are not grateful for what we've received, what's going to happen? It'll be taken from us. And there's a similar lesson again in the parable of the talents. So the solution here is developing gratitude. You know, I like that expression, attitude of gratitude. It's easy to remember and it's a good concept for us to try to put into practice. Number four, they were more interested in present rewards than in the privilege of service. Well, that shows greed. And it also reminds us once again of Judas. He was more interested in present reward than he was in the privilege of having fellowship and companionship with our Lord Jesus. And it also reminds us of Esau, who sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. And so we certainly do want to be very careful that we not allow temporal things to ever take first place in our affections. We have to have temporal things, but we are to use them. We own things, they should not own us. If we allow that to get out of balance, then we're in danger. And we are reminded in Matthew 6:19-21, we'll go ahead and read that. It's a beautiful lesson that's harmonious with our lesson here. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. We want our treasure to be in heaven. We want to recognize that we're passing through, and that everything that we have is only to be used for that ultimate objective, to reach our destination, which is eternal. The things of this life, they just pass away. And we see so much of that. Just read the news. So the solution to the problem is Matthew 6:19-21. And if we had to put it in a word, the word would be treasure. We tried to put one word to each of these solutions. And we have to ask ourselves, where's our treasure? We want our treasure to be in the proper place. Number five, the murmurers considered themselves better than the others who had worked a shorter time. And obviously the sin there was pride. And that's a very serious danger. And it reminds us of the sin of the Pharisees. And an example of that, there's many, but a good one would be in Luke 18:10-14. We won't read it. But in Luke 18:10-14, Jesus was talking about the two men in the temple. And you remember there was a Pharisee and there was a publican. And he shows the attitude of the two. And the Pharisee thought that he was better because of what he had done. And you also have another picture with the prodigal son parable. And the son who had remained obedient, which I believe, represents the Pharisee class. He was upset because the father made a feast for the prodigal who came back. And he thought, well, he said, you never did that for me. You never killed the fatted calf for me. You never gave me a party. It shows a wrong attitude. And it's consistent with some of the other points that we looked at, too. So there's these other parallels. And we can't help but think of the lesson of John and Peter given in John 22. John 22, especially verses 21 and 22. And it's consistent with a problem that existed a number of times that we find in the Gospels. This whole conflict amongst the apostles, who's going to be greatest? And what's the problem? They were being overly concerned about somebody else when they should put the primary focus on themselves. And that was the lesson that Jesus gave to Peter. You know, Jesus is telling Peter, well, here's how you're going to live and here's how you're going to die. And what does Peter say? Well, what about him? What about your favorite? And what does Jesus say? Jesus says, that's none of your business. Well, he doesn't use those words. But he says, what's that to thee? Follow thou me. And that's got to be our responsibility. The Lord's dealing with us as individuals. We compare ourselves to Jesus and not to one another. Well, there's proper ways that we can appreciate one another. But our comparison has to be to the perfect standard. The parable of the talents contained a warning to those who had the least, that even those with the least have to be faithful in how they use it. That's an important lesson. And in some ways, we think the lesson that's here is, you know, kind of in an opposite direction in some ways. It's a lesson for those who believe that they've done more. Now, in reality, it's true. Some do more than others. But that's not important. Because as was mentioned earlier, no matter how much we do or how well we do it, we are at best unprofitable servants. And the Lord doesn't need us. His plan's not going to fail because we fail to do something. He will find someone. The work is for our benefit. It's a blessing to us. We're the ones who get the benefit from it. We need to always remember that. And so, if we've had more privileges in the Lord's vineyard, we are more deeply indebted to God. We shouldn't feel that we deserve more. What are the practical results? What's the bottom line lesson of this parable? The first shall be last, the last shall be first. Well, it's the other way around. The last are first and the first are last. And that lesson is given in Mark 10:31. But as we already mentioned, it's also the way that Jesus introduces this parable in chapter 19, verse 30. And it's how he closes the parable. So there must be some special significance because he emphasizes it twice. And we would like to suggest that the point is, the simplest way to look at it is that those who do the murmuring, by implication, are going to be last. The murmurers are last. They're put in last place in the final analysis. What does last place mean? Well, we already looked at some examples, and it's not just one possibility. It depends on the severity of the murmuring. Now, we don't want to be guilty of any of these things, but if we persist in them, we, at the very least, would lose our place in the bride class. Not only the called and the chosen, but those who ultimately retain their chosen status and become members of the bride on the other side. And if it's persisted in sufficiently, the result could be the loss not only of membership in the bride, but the loss of life in the second death. So once again, it's serious business that we're involved in. Let us summarize and conclude. To serve God is a privilege, always. The more privileges we have, the more deeply indebted we should feel to God. The rewards that we receive are tremendous. Hundredfold blessing of the present life. And they're unmerited. We don't deserve anything. And yet the God, our Heavenly Father, God has showered these things upon us in abundance. As stated before, we are at best unprofitable servants. So He's not giving us these great rewards because we're such good workers. He isn't judging us on what we do. He's not even judging us on what we are. He's really looking more at what we could be. And that's what He's trying to cultivate in us. And that's what we should be trying to do to help each other, to be all that we can be, to help our brethren to be all that they can be. Those who murmur will not be of the bride if that is persisted in. So the lesson for us, we looked at the problems, but we want to focus primarily on the solutions. We want to be loyal. We want to be just. We want to be humble. We want to be content. We want to remember the 5 points and we want to remember their solution. Submission, love, gratitude, having the proper treasures in our heart. And I didn't give you the 5th one. I'm sorry. If you go back to your notes, if you're writing notes under the 5th one, I didn't give you the solution. The problem was pride. And the solution we find, well, in the life of our Lord Jesus, and it's perhaps best epitomized in Philippians, the 2nd chapter. And we'll only read the 3rd verse. Because in point 5, they thought that they deserved more than others. And it was pride. But let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. And, you know, if we look at ourselves objectively, well, it's a scary thing, first of all. And it's not something that we can do easily. We need help. I love Psalm 19, you know, the conclusion there after he's looked at creation and he says, wow, it's perfect. And then he looks at God's law and he says, again, wow, it's perfect. And then the 3rd part, he looks at himself. And what does he say? Not perfect. And then he realizes the depth of that imperfection and he says, who can know his faults? Reveal thou my secret faults. And so we need help in that regard. So we want to consider others better than ourselves. And a good way to do that is we mind our own business, like Jesus said to Peter. And we try to look at ourselves. We try to pray that prayer that the Lord would reveal our secret faults so that we will never be guilty in any sense of murmuring against the Lord, against His arrangements. But to the contrary, that we would appreciate everything He's done for us. And what's the best way, the most practical way that we can do that? It's to fulfill the new commandment that Jesus gave to us. As I have loved you, love one another. May the Lord help us not only to avoid murmuring, but on the contrary, to give praises to God by our thoughts, our words, and our deeds, and our relationship one to another. Thank you.